All right, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Sunday Night Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, Infowars.com, band.video, or wherever you're finding us, Rumble or some bootleg stream on some other disreputable site. However you're finding us, congratulations on getting around the censorship. Congratulations on breaking through the digital firewall and finding this singular bastion for truth, Infowars.com. We have, oh, so very much to discuss today. We're going to be talking a lot about war, a lot about world war, as there are some extremely interesting developments in the typical places, the Middle East, Ukraine, as well as, of course, China getting in there as well. We are going to be taking your phone calls. Thank you to Owen Schroer for, as he puts it, warming the phone lines up for me. We're going to get to those throughout the show today. We'll be with you here till the 8 o'clock central hour. Of course, talking about some more domestic issues as well. I just have my pile of news. I'm separating into categories as we speak. We have the Black Lives Matter category. We have the mind control and government-sanctioned propaganda stack. As we do want to go a little bit back in time, all the way back to that long-off year of 2012, when it seems like the Mayans were right. There was some sort of cataclysmic event, but it wasn't an asteroid, it wasn't a massive volcano. No, it was the unleashing of the American government's ability to propagandize its own people. So we'll talk about that as well. Again, Black Lives Matter is going to be on the forefront, not only for the just increasingly absurd series of issues that are being revealed about them, as more and more people are realizing just what a scam this whole thing was. You know, most scams are sort of harmless beyond the primary purpose, right? Most scams, somebody loses money, somebody else makes money, bing, bang, boom. I was going to say everybody's happy. Half the people are happy. The other half of the people are furious. This is a scam with such widespread and horrific implications and outcomes that there needs to be a new word for it. It is beyond a scam. It is a scam of civilization-shattering proportion. So we'll get to all of that. And down here at the bottom of my stack is the story that gives us the title of today's program, and that is the very curious series of events that's been going on at the Afghanistan-Iran border. Now, it's sort of like one of those things that we just need like a running ticker for, as for my entire life, we've been hearing about how Iran is just on the cusp of creating a nuclear bomb, and we must, for the sake of humanity, go to war with that country. And it seems like it's one of those things where most of the time it's just sound and fury signifying nothing. It's just Netanyahu coloring in a cartoon bomb in front of the UN, telling everybody that we're all about to be killed by Iran in a desperate attempt to embroil America into yet another ceaseless, pointless, hugely devastating war in the Middle East. But it's one of those things that's like you can ignore it until you can't anymore. It's propaganda and psychological operations until it's not, until it becomes real. So we have to keep an eye on it. We have to keep tabs on it. And we do. And throughout the week on American Journal, we've been covering some interesting updates to it. I haven't been able to find any corroborating evidence. I haven't been able to find the video of it, like the actual video of it. But apparently Netanyahu went on Instagram Live for like 1 minute and 30 seconds and was just like, our enemies will be surprised, and then turned it off. A little bit troubling. And you just have various, but again, it's one of the things that every month or so you get this kind of saber rattling, you get this kind of, we are now at the finish line, now we must launch attacks, here we come, and then like nothing ever really comes of it. But that's happening again. So again, it could be this time. It could actually be the real deal this time. And interestingly, there was a article, I think it was on the Wall Street Journal or maybe the New York Times, or something, one of the big very popular and well-respected mainstream media outlets saying the CIA doesn't know if Israel wants to attack Iran or not. It's like, really? You don't know that? You're not sure if that's something they'd like to do? Because I know. I have a pretty good idea about what they want in that regard. They don't stop talking about it, so everybody should be fairly well familiar with this. But all of this is just a lead up to, again, some very interesting occurrences on the Afghanistan-Iran border very, very recently, as well as some others. Here's a story, and again, it's hard to find mainstream media articles about this, so I guess take everything I read here with a grain of salt because it's just posted by somebody on Twitter, but they do have videos that go along with it that seem to corroborate what they're saying. The story is this: border fight erupts between Taliban and Iran. According to local media reports in Nimroz, an armed conflict erupted this morning between Taliban forces and Iranian border guards at the Nimroz border. Armed clashes between Iran and Taliban began at the Nimroz border as tensions escalate over a water dispute and Iranian farmers entering Afghan territory. The two nations share a 900-kilometer border, and Iran does not recognize the Taliban government. The border clash of Iran and Taliban was still ongoing in Nimroz province of Afghanistan. Yesterday, the Taliban released a video on their social media threatening Iran with military action. Tensions are now at an all-time high between these two neighboring countries. I believe we actually have some of these videos. You can play them as B-roll. Last night, clashes between Taliban and Iranian forces resumed when the Taliban attacked another Iranian border outpost along the Nimroz border. And it's an interesting set of videos. I believe there should be another one where it's a daytime attack. Not seeing it on the list, but they're out there and they're all on this Twitter thread as well. It's interesting because what you're seeing is American military equipment attacking Iran, because of course the Taliban has largely been armed by America's retreat from that country. That's kind of interesting. It's kind of coincidental, kind of one of those things where two mistakes end up to counteract each other, right? We leave Afghanistan, leaving behind $80+ billion of military equipment, and it just so happens that the Taliban then turns that equipment on our geopolitical enemies, like our number one guy at the top of the bad guy list, Iran. That's sort of a happy coincidence, isn't it? I mean, if I didn't know any better, it's almost like America purposefully armed Taliban and is now using them as a proxy army against Iran. Wouldn't that be something interesting? Wouldn't that be sort of a return to form for the organization that we created in the first place back when the Soviet Union was mucking around in Afghanistan and we wanted to arm the locals against the communists? Huh. Isn't that interesting? Yesterday, the Taliban shared a video on their social media threatening Iran with military actions. And they mentioned that the tension is high. You saw there the, was that Reuters or was that Al Jazeera, the headline saying 3 dead from these border clashes. The Iranian army has also deployed a unit of its special forces near the border of Afghanistan along with Nimroz to target the Afghan Taliban. At least 3 killed in shooting in Iran-Afghan border. Several people were reportedly injured in the clash, which came amid tensions between the neighbors over water rights. Head of Taliban's elite Badri unit, Abdul Hamid Khorasani, says if the elders of the Islamic Emirate give permission for the Mujahideen of the Islamic Emirate, the Mujahideen of the Islamic Emirate will conquer Iran within 24 hours, God willing. Oh. a little bit of overconfidence there, maybe. Maybe just a little bit. I mean, why don't you work on having a functioning government first and then worry about conquering the state of Iran in 24 hours. The Taliban-Iran border clashes happened immediately after, and this is where it really gets interesting, an unannounced meeting between Taliban Defense Minister Mohammad Yaqub and U.S. Central Command officials in Bagram. Huh. So maybe, just maybe, the idea that Afghanistan, the Taliban, who now rules that country, was armed by America, who is now using that force to attack Iran. Maybe that's not as far-fetched as it may seem at first blush. Farzana Ahmadi on Twitter reports, a meeting between Mullah Yaqub and the American Army was held in Bagram. Representatives of the U.S. Army CENTCOM Command arrived in Kabul last week to meet Taliban Defense Minister Mullah Yaqub. The May meeting in Bagram is by no means unique, said a former senior Afghan security official familiar with the situation. Taliban have torpedoed good neighborly relations with almost all of Afghanistan's neighbors, except for China. Since taking power, the count of border skirmishes are as follows. They've had 18 border skirmishes with Pakistan, 3 with Uzbekistan, 7 with Tajikistan, 9 with Iran, and 2 with Turkmenistan. But there's more than just this coincidence that has some people raising their eyebrows. Again, last week you have apparently, reportedly, a meeting between U.S. Army Central Command and Taliban forces. In addition to that, as part of a United Nations humanitarian aid, $40 million of American money has arrived as a package in Afghanistan. This was on the 15th of May. Afghanistan's central bank, Afghanistan Bank, DAB, that's funny, on Sunday announced that a fresh USD $40 million cash package has reached Kabul amid the ongoing humanitarian crisis, and said this is the second cash shipment to Kabul that they've received in less than 4 days, comma, press reported on Sunday. Since the Taliban seized power in August 2021, the cash aid shipped to Afghanistan has exceeded all limits. The United Nations humanitarian aid has arrived in Kabul on Thursday, May 11th, according to an announcement from Afghanistan's central bank, and has been placed in a private commercial bank to the tune of $40 million. The shipment was welcomed by Afghan central bank as part of the UN's humanitarian monetary assistance, and the international community has urged continue working together in all areas. The use of these funds has always been a contentious issue, and donor nations, particularly the United States, have refrained from investigating their use. The U.S. State Department has previously refused to disclose specifics regarding U.S. payments to Afghanistan, and the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction has previously shown that U.S. donations to Afghanistan are not very clear, reported Comma Press. On the other hand, the United Nations Assistance Mission in Afghanistan had earlier made it clear that money sent to Afghanistan is put in U.N. accounts at a commercial bank and will only be utilized by U.N. agencies for humanitarian aid and other supportive programs in war-torn Afghanistan. So, what we have here is Israel and America saber-rattling and increasingly calling for war with Iran. You have a border dispute between Afghanistan and Iran boiling over to the point that you have a fairly sizable invasion of Iran by Afghanistan forces using American military equipment. Shortly after a meeting, a secret meeting of top brass between the Taliban and the United States, and an additional gift from the United States via the United Nations of $40 million straight into the private bank coffers of the Taliban leadership. Meanwhile, U.S. builds new base in northern Syria, signaling indefinite occupation. No, we never declared war on Syria. No. No politician has ever deigned to even offer an excuse as to why we should be involved in that country beyond obvious and thoroughly disproven lies, such as the chemical attacks that Bashar al-Assad did not commit against his own people. And yet not only have we been in this conflict for, what, nearly a decade at this point? More? I mean, how long? I mean, it depends on where you start, I guess. Depends on where you start counting. You know, is it when we founded ISIS, when Obama created that terrorist organization? Or is it when we actively got involved with troops on the ground? Yeah, it's variable where you put the starting point. either way, it was years and years and years ago. And so for years, we've been involved, embroiled, and largely the primary force behind this massive military conflict in Syria, despite never declaring war, hardly even really bothering to justify it under some authorization of force from several decades ago. That's usually the tactic, right? Well, we can bomb Libya to the Stone Age. We can start a war in Syria. Why? Well, because the CIA lied us into a war with Iraq 2 decades ago. So now it's gloves off, no holds barred. Ridiculous, but there it is. Zero Hedge has this story, latest as it signals. Not only are we still in Syria, for no apparent reason, but we're going to stay. U.S. builds a new base in northern Syria, signaling indefinite occupation. The U.S.-led anti-ISIS coalition is building a new military base in Syria's northern province of Raqqa. The New Arab reported, citing a source close to the Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces. The U.S. backs the SDF and keeps about 900 troops, officially at least, in eastern Syria, allowing the U.S. to control about one-third of Syria's territory. The report said there are currently about 24 U.S.-led military sites spread throughout eastern Syria. 24 U.S.-led military sites. These aren't huts, folks, right? These aren't tents. America doesn't go to the Middle East and just set up shop with an RV with a satellite dish on top, right? Every one of these is a full-fledged installation. Barracks and armories and training centers. I mean, these are billion-dollar operations. We have 24 of them just in eastern Syria. No declaration of war. No reason to be there. It's just, what? Okay, all right. No, this is how an empire acts, I guess. Complete contradiction to its citizens' well-being and actual desires to fix problems here at home. We're just continuing to do everything we can to stop the outbreak of peace in the Middle East, as that does seem to be happening, and it's happening under the guidance and direction of China. Because why not? Because of course. Because would these countries ever trust America to bring peace ever? All we do is blow them up. All we do is cause them strife and chaos and misery. Talk about driving somebody into your enemy's hands. How can you even blame them? I'm not happy with it. I'd rather America be that force for peace. I'd rather America be spending the money that we're spending, if we have to spend it. Hey, if we have to spend the billions of dollars in black ledger, unreported, illegal, unjustified military spending in the Middle East, you know, maybe if it was helping the people of the Middle East, it'd be a little bit more understandable. Maybe they'd treat us like they're now treating China, as a bringer of peace, as a unifier, as somebody who can benefit hugely from their reconstruction rather than their destruction. But our leadership has chosen to play it the opposite way. Instead, we've been set up as the bad guys. Our money, our blood, our soldiers, our livelihood, our reputation across the world, that's what's been spent to destroy the United States, or destroy the Middle East rather. And now China can waltz on in and scoop up the pieces and make bank and just establish massive control grids across that entire area. Almost like a song and dance, almost like a pre-planned sort of play they're playing out here for all of us. So America gets to be despised. We get to be hated. The American people, who largely never wanted any of this, and if they did want it, it's because they were psychologically tricked. They were lied into supporting these wars, like so many people in my life, so many family members I have who were all about the Iraq war because they truly believed the lies that were spread through the mainstream media propagated by the CIA. And now they don't. Now they understand. Now they're pissed at the American government just as much as the Middle Easterners are. Because why should we receive the brunt of this? U.S. coalition against Islamic State building new base in northern Syria. So we'll be there for a good little while, I guess. It's ridiculous and absurd. And at the same time, just hugely popular and frankly impressive agreements being signed between Middle Eastern countries as the Arab coalition welcomes Bashar al-Assad and the Syrian people back into their geopolitical bloc. This is awesome. I mean, it's just one of those things, right? Ostensibly, theoretically, supposedly, we're there to fight ISIS. Very strange how that works, because we go and create a base, and then it's from that exact location that ISIS seems to spawn. What? How's that happen? Crazy, right? Totally nuts. It's almost like we're training them. Wouldn't that be nuts? Wouldn't that be just totally nuts if that was the case? Because it is. But they even admit ISIS holds no significant territory, and the Syrian government and its allies would continue to fight the remnants of the terror group if the U.S. withdrew. So we're actually like stopping them from fighting ISIS. And we have. I mean, it's been reported in the past where ISIS is going to attack somebody, and lo and behold, by sheer coincidence, I'm sure, America uses its Air Force to bomb the area, soften it up right before ISIS moves in. Construction of a new base demonstrates U.S. plans to continue the occupation indefinitely. So ISIS doesn't really exist anymore, certainly doesn't hold any land. If we just got out of the way, the Syrian government could probably mop it all up and retake their land after having already essentially achieved victory in the civil war that, again, we fostered and created and armed the combatants of. In March, the House of the United States Congress voted down a resolution introduced by Republican Matt Gaetz that would have ordered President Biden to withdraw from Syria. The legislation failed in a vote of 103 to 321, with 56 Democrats and 47 Republicans voting in favor of the bill. The House also recently voted to maintain sanctions on Syria after an earthquake killed thousands of Syrians. Only two members of Congress voted against that legislation. Like, we're just so evil. The U.S. is just so relentlessly evil on the geopolitical stage. You go around to the American people just in your life, and it's like everybody's nice. Everybody's just the friendliest people. You can, they take their shirt off their back just to help you out in a time of need. Somehow all that good nature, somehow all of that peace and love and friendliness, by the time it percolates up to the level of Congress and the Senate, it's just people who are withholding medical aid from a country that has received a massive, unprecedented earthquake that's killed tens of thousands, which is completely crippling their entire country. And we refuse to even let up sanctions, which by international law shouldn't even apply to emergency material. It shouldn't apply to medicine or food. Like, that's not how sanctions are supposed to work, but we don't exactly play by the international rules. We love screaming about the international rules while we're, I don't know, spending $100 billion on Ukraine and wagging our finger at Russia, even though Russia has figured out a long time ago how to play within the international rules, so we really can't say anything about it because we flagrantly violate them at every pass, at every turn, like refusing to lift sanctions after an earthquake. It's not legal, but we withhold it. We stop other countries from delivering medical aid to earthquake victims. And then we call ourselves the good guys. And this is being done in our name, my name and your name. And the people of the Middle East are learning to hate us because at the end of the day, we are responsible. It is people who are representing us that are doing this. Instead of actually arguing about the justification and reasons for going to war, now we just go to war with no reason, no justification, without even asking the American people. And then it goes on for a decade or so. And then Congress votes whether or not to end it. And they say, nah, let's not end it. Let's build more bases. Let's keep it going. But hell, you know, the Taliban is now launching attacks into Iran with American money and equipment after having just met with American Central Command. Isn't that such coincidence? And also in the lines of World War III, because that's what this is. You could really make an argument that World War III has been going on, I don't know, 2011, maybe? Again, it depends on how far back you want to zoom out, and I can't help but think that 1,000 years from now, if humanity defeats the globalists and actually makes it that long, people will look back and these won't be disparate events. It'll just be like, America went to war in 2003 after false flagging America into a conflict by lying about the weapons of mass destruction and carrying out the false flag inside job of 9/11. And it just hasn't ended since then. And it just goes from Iraq, Afghanistan, into Syria, into Libya, into Somalia and the Sudan. And like all of these things are just wrapped up. And then Russia is getting involved in Syria with, by the way, permission from the Syrian government, because that's how you do it in the bounds of international law. America's doing it outside of those bounds while still waving the law book in the air as if we're right. So I can't help but think 1,000 years from now, all of this is going to be seen in one continuum of American aggression and Russian counteraction from Syria to Ukraine and everywhere in between. And I wouldn't be surprised if we really do just wake up one day, I don't know, this week, next week, and see that a massive attack has been launched against Iran. I mean, we have naval ships that are menacing Iran. Like, they've forced two of our submarines to surface in the last couple of months. It's just endless, endless warmongering, endless warfare has nothing to do with the American people, nothing to do with what benefits us or serves us or what is destroying us from the inside out. But we are going to meddle and disturb and kill and murder. Are we the baddies? Yeah, it kind of feels like that, doesn't it? Doesn't it kind of feel like we're the baddies? Doesn't it kind of feel like it's all orchestrated to destroy America, both from the outside through our reputation and the inside through the communist indoctrination, only to, like, spiking the cannons of a fort before you flee? The globalists are setting up China to be the new on-the-rise civilization. Now that it's in a thoroughly locked-down, closed society with social credit scores and facial recognition and all of these other control mechanisms that they're trying desperately to get past the defense line here in America. The defense line being, of course, conservatives and the American people and people who believe in freedom and privacy and all of the things of the World Economic Forum and, coincidentally, China both see going away in the very near future. See, we're the defense, we're the blockers, we're the linemen for this just ungodly, world-ending, apocalyptic, dystopian world that they're creating, that they already have fully implemented in China. And now that our reputation is destroyed overseas and our unity is destroyed here, you know, maybe it's time for them to launch the all-out attack, launch World War III, and really get their programs moving. I mean, their plan is depopulation. Their plan is to bring about total control of America through rationing and censorship and surveillance. And I mean, you think World War III would prevent them from carrying that out? It would only expedite that mission. It would only give them all the excuse they would need to implement these horrific and liberty-destroying measures. If they can just get the American people to go along with it, to keep their eyes shut, keep their ears plugged, and just be led blind like sheep to the slaughter. West is, quote, playing with fire over plans to send F-16s to Ukraine, is what Sergey Lavrov said, the Russian FM foreign minister. He slammed an attempt to weaken Russia by Washington, London, and their satellites in the EU. I'd have to say, just a correct description of the globalist power structure. He says they're playing with fire. They're moving nuclear bombs to Belarus. China's blowing up American aircraft carriers in their simulations. China, Russia, Iran against America, Israel, the EU. They're drawing the lines. They're going to launch World War III. We can stop them if we choose to. The choice they're making is our destruction. We'll be right back with your calls. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Sunday Night Live. I hope everybody's having a nice Sunday. I hope everybody has good plans for Memorial Day. I know American Journal will be playing a rebroadcast for our Friday show. Thought it was a pretty good show to rebroadcast, but we will be taking a day to honor those that have fallen in defense of our liberty. Perhaps more important now than ever to do that exact thing. It honestly, I don't know how any American isn't just like filled with horrific shame when they think about what this country's become, and you just picture the litter of just millions upon millions of young men that have laid down their lives to bring us the inheritance of liberty, only to have it squandered by ungrateful communists in our own ranks. It really is a shame. So really, I really do feel like every day we do what we can to honor what those people fought and died for by just having beliefs that are just American. They're just American. Sure, the leftist calls them extreme MAGA terrorism, whatever they say. It's literally just what we were founded on. It's just liberty. It's just liberty, folks. It's going away now, and the people that are stealing it from us are calling us bad for wanting it not to be taken away. You can ignore and defeat them. Feel free anytime. So we'll keep doing that. We'll go out to your phone calls here in just a second. If you want to call in, the number to dial is 1-877-789-2539. That's 1-877-789-2539. Give us a call now. Phone lines are open. We'll be taking your calls throughout the rest of the show today. And folks, even if you didn't like InfoWars, even if you didn't want to support us for what we do, after all, this information is free, free to broadcast, free to air. No one has to pay for this information. No one has to subscribe or pay a monthly fee, because the mission is the info war. The mission is to get this information out there. Download it yourself, re-upload it yourself, monetize it yourself. We don't care. Do whatever you want. Just get it out there. Just let people know. Just make people aware. That's our mission. And even if you don't want to support that mission, you probably should still go to InfoWarsStore.com. Even if you hate us, our products will still work for you. Our products don't discriminate. Okay, they make great gifts. Buy somebody an air filter or a water filter. They'll love it. They don't have to know where it came from. But it really is a 360 win, because you are supporting us. You are keeping us on the air. You are keeping us in this fight that is more important now than ever. But even if you didn't like us, you'd still probably like our products. Our products really are bombshell. They really are incredible. Take TurboForce Plus as an example. It's brand new, just was introduced, still 25% off, and still available at InfoWarsStore.com. And a lot of things that people take for energy, they have like one ingredient that works, caffeine, just like tons of caffeine. Nobody knows. Sure, caffeine will make you feel awake for a little while, and then you crash super hard, and it'll make you jittery and jumpy and not be able to keep your attention. So instead, why not go with something like TurboForce Plus that uses just this massive list of vitamins and minerals and all these wonderful things that all work with each other to bring about an incredible effect of energy that is very long-lasting, very unlike caffeine in that it's not, doesn't make you jittery and frenetic and can't focus, but it's just like a smooth, it's like waking up from a really good nap. That's how it is drinking TurboForce Plus. That's my experience with it. Vitamin C, thiamine, which is a B vitamin that converts food into energy. Vitamin C is, of course, a powerful antioxidant and supports the immune system. Niacin is an essential B vitamin for vascular support. Vitamin B6 supports energy metabolism. L-taurine is an amino acid that's found in large portions of the brain, heart, and blood. Beta-alanine, an amino acid that helps produce carcinine. Green tea leaf extract, kola nut extract, coffee berry coffee fruit extract, Guyana seed extract, yerba mate leaf extract, Elev ATP, which is a patented and clinically studied ingredient made from a combination of ancient peat and apple extracts, along with many, many others. So there is caffeine in it, but that's not where it gets its power. It gets its power from all this other stuff, and it really is a powerful product that you will appreciate, and it goes to support the InfoWar. We really, really do appreciate you going to InfoWarsStore.com. Just read the list, do your own research, see if it's right for you, and try it out at InfoWarsStore.com. With that, we'll go out to the phone calls here for a moment. I still have a lot of videos to show you as well. We'll talk a little bit about Black Lives Matter coming up and a little bit about Ken Paxton being impeached. It's completely ridiculous and very typical how this is taking place. There's also been some posts from Russia showing evidence of dangerous pathogen research in Ukraine. They've published some very disturbing infographics with that information. And then we'll zoom out a little bit and take a look at the way the World Economic Forum, the World Health Organization, the UN, and other massive globalist organizations, why they're doing this, how they're doing it, and what the end game truly is. So we'll still have a lot to talk about on today's program, but let's take your calls now. Bart in Georgia wants to talk about the Target boycott, which is still having just massive success. Something like a quarter of their market value was lost in a single week. $9 billion in a single week just down the toilet because they do not stop pushing this satanic agenda. Bart in Georgia, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Yeah, I've been sitting here thinking about Target and how we can remove this transgender garbage out of the children's section. If we have any law enforcement that agree with us that they're breaking the law, we can get some local police departments to go into these stores that are selling this stuff. It's called contributing to the delinquency of a minor. Just off the top of my head, arrest one manager for this, seize all their stuff as evidence, and that'll shut them. That'll stop them from selling it.
It's an interesting thought. I mean, the problem is that they're very careful about what they do. I don't know. It's hard to even comprehend how this is going to end because they don't see it as delinquency of a minor. You know, what they're doing is implanting like a mental illness in people's brains, transgenderism. It's like a social contagion that they're helping to spread. But how do you convince people of that when the people that are pushing it and the people that are being affected by it think it's a good thing? I don't know. It's a good idea, Bart. But that would take somebody in the government having a pair. And so I don't know if that's the way to do it. But I mean, so far, the protests have had massive success. Not even the protests, just the boycotts, just not shopping there has them like tearing their hair out and freaking out like never before. Thank you for the call, Bart. Let's go to Johnny in Denmark. You want to talk about Dr. Shiva's candidacy. Go ahead, Johnny, you're on the air.
Yeah, I was very happy to learn recently that Dr. Shiva became a candidate for U.S. president. Not that he necessarily has a great chance to win, but I think often it's a good idea for someone who's really principled to run to introduce some real principle into the debate for president. For those who don't know, he's a worldwide top medical, scientific, and general psychological, sociological, political, economical, historical, medical, and scientific polymath. I mean, the guy is literally a one in a billion. His credentials, MIT, BS, MS, MENG, PhD in biological engineering. And
He's the man credited with inventing email.
Well, at least civilian email. Yeah, I was going to get to that. Who knows whether he invented email per se, because if the government invented it,
right.
As Steve Pachanik has indicated, it was classified with civilian email, and he did it at a very young age, too, sure. And the inventor of, I was just getting to that, we're on the same wavelength. Civilian email, Cytosolve, which is fantastic, personalized medicine, anticipating interactions between foods. It's one of the greatest inventions of the century. AI-enabled CRM, et cetera, and a world-leading health expert, et cetera. And he had some recent good YouTube AVs that people can look up, an interview by Christy Lee of him of America Needs a President Who's a Real American. It's on YouTube. And it's about 13 minutes on YouTube, and the rest of it's supposed to be on Dr. Shiva's website, vashiva.com.
He's running for president in this election. I hadn't heard him announce his candidacy.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he has. Okay. And actually, if you listen to his videos, you'll hear it. And actually, Christy Lee interviewed about him. Asked that question. Why run for president? You probably don't have a great chance of winning. And he pointed, and he had another good video. Unfortunately, though, that video, the continuation on, and I wrote to Christy because I'm friends with her on Facebook, that when you go to the Vashiva site, vashiva.com, and you try to find the continuation of that interview, which is, I don't know, about an hour, you can't, even though you remember, which I am. And for the inventor of email, or at least civilian email, it was kind of a strange bug. It says, you must log in, and then one line underneath, you are logged in.
Okay, well, that's interesting. You. But, so, you know, Shiva, Dr. Shiva reminds me, or, you know, he's one of these people that I think, kind of like Vivek Ramaswamy, they're like, they don't have enough oomph, they don't have enough star power or name recognition to be successful candidates in their own right, but I would love to see them like team up with another candidate. For some reason, just like Dr. Shiva and maybe like RFK Jr., like they both have similar kind of like fact-driven scientific sort of interpretations of what's going on. I feel like they could make really powerful duos or you know, team. I wish all these really great people would team up together and create powerful political forces unified rather than going after one another. Though I don't know, maybe if he's in the debates, it makes everybody else up their game a little bit. I could see that being a positive outcome of a lot of the intra-party dynamics that we're seeing right now between DeSantis and Trump. I'd like to see both of them try to outright wing each other, right? Try to be more right-wing than the other. That could be a positive outcome of both of them being in the race, although for now it just looks like it's causing a bunch of chaos and division. But very interesting. I'm sorry that I haven't kept up with Dr. Shiva as much as maybe I should, and I'll check into that interview with Christy Lee. Thank you for that, Johnny. Let's go to Steve in Alaska now. You want to talk about this new DHS/ADL terror list. I hope you'll notice I'm actually fully decked out in terrorist paraphernalia here. I have my tie is actually the come and take it flag. I don't know if you can see that, but that was actually listed in the document that you saw in the pyramid of extremism. There was the historical battle flag of the Texas Revolution, where outnumbered Texans took on a much larger and much more professional Mexican army and actually won, and they can't have you knowing that things like that happened in history. They want you on the side of the tyrannical emperors that crush rebellions. So I also have a belt buckle that is the come and take it flag, and I guess I went with my golden armadillo today. I have a come and take it pin. I thought I wore that. But anyway, Steve in Alaska, the come and take it flag is on the list. What's your opinion on this DHS-ADL terrorist watch list that they're now cooking up?
So the ADL is a agency that has advised the U.S. government for decades, of course, right? And they always, they're the ones that wrote the hate crime laws that'll persecute white people but not black people or any of other color, mm-hmm. which that's a whole separate topic in itself.
No, they train every FBI recruit, the ADL.
Yes. So if you look at them now and you look at that list, you'll notice that socialism's on it, right? So socialism invaded our country and back in, what, the 40s or whatever, when all the people came over, the architects of the Western decline, and they came over with their socialism, which was actually disguised cultural Marxism, and they infiltrated all of the academia, Hollywood, et cetera, et cetera. And then, of course, we, over decades, because they're patient, socialists are technically patient. So they infiltrate, they subjugate, and change people's beliefs. And now they are so entrenched that they are getting ready to move to their Marxism side, because communists always evolve from socialism to Marxism, always. Right. And that brings in tyranny and all the rest of the stuff that is it's coming. And the only way that we can, you know, stop it is actually to stand up and stop it. I hate to say that, because Trump's not going to survive. I don't think Biden's going to let the White House go. I don't think they're going to, you know, give power back to people that can make changes. And I hate to sound blackmailed there, but that's just the reality of the situation. They've gone so far right now that, and there's so much evidence on it all, that everything from Nuremberg Code violations to charges of treason can happen to them, and they know it, and they're scared. So, you know, I hate to say it, there's a really good video. It's on BitChute. It's called The Architects of Western Decline. It's about the Frankfurt School and the cultural Marxism coming, and if people haven't heard of that, I suggest watching. It's about 30 minutes long, and it will educate those that need to be educated about what's coming and how they got into the positions they're in. Frankly, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I know exactly what you're talking about. And of course, it's not just America that's happening. This is happening in it is happening across the Western world. But America is the only country with the First Amendment. We're the only country with the Second Amendment. We're the only country that has these things that people like to downplay. Even people on the right, some of them, some of the new guys, some of the younger guys, like, are just like, oh, the Second Amendment doesn't matter because you know, you won't ever rise up. It's like you cling to your guns while they take your children away. And to a part of that, it is true. I mean, you can't help but deny that they are very brazen in their tyranny, even with the Second Amendment here. But just imagine if they didn't. Just imagine if we didn't have it. And just imagine being one of these tyrants, being one of these people implementing this stuff. You have to take into account the millions upon millions of Americans that are armed and pissed off. Like, you can't just ignore that. So many of their plans have to be carefully conducted so as not to trip the alarm that sets off the American people. So that's why you see a lot of what they're doing being done in such a sly and quiet way, because we do have the Second Amendment and they do recognize what a danger that is to them if they were to push too far. So we, you know, it's one thing that we can't give up, and it's one thing that makes us the biggest target for them. But it is happening across the Western world, and we're going to get in a little bit later to what's happening in Ireland, of all places, as well, where this is taking hold and just gutting that entire country in a ruthless way. We'll go to one more call in the night. I have some videos. A lot of the calls have been making me think of these videos. In fact, one of the callers that called into Owen previously was talking about Michelle Bachmann and her laying out the World Health Organization's plan to take over the world. I have that video that I want to go to in just a little bit, as well as Robert Welch in 1958 predicting basically everything that we're seeing here, as you know, you're talking about the socialist takeover that began in the probably around the late 50s. And then also just a breakdown of stakeholder capitalism, which is the term they use to disguise what is by definition fascism run by the World Economic Forum. We'll go to one more call before we do that. Jefferson in Virginia, thanks so much for calling in and holding. You have a comment about a Neuralink, Elon Musk's company that, despite killing all the monkeys, is now going to start testing on humans. Go ahead, Jefferson. You're on the air.
Hey, Harrison. Happy Sunday.
Hello. Thanks for calling in.
Dr. Shiva is no fan of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. He calls the Kennedy family a bunch of fakers. So they're never going to make it together.
All right. They just have a similar kind of style, in my opinion. But I didn't know he felt that way.
Yeah, I didn't know that either until I watched the Christy Lee interview. And
interesting.
He was ragging on an awful lot of people. He's mad at everybody.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. You vote for a person that has Neuralink in their brain to be an elected official.
Do we get to monitor it? I don't know. That might be a good thing. You put Neuralink in all the public officials, and we can keep tabs on them inside their own heads. No, I wouldn't, yeah, Jefferson.
Right. It should be a disqualifier. Let's say they put a Neuralink in Fetterman or Feinstein right now, and they got better suddenly, or Biden suddenly started to sound like himself 20 years ago. We would have to deal with the improvement, and then people thinking that's a good thing, that the Neuralink is in their head and they're actually acting like normal people now. But you don't know who's controlling the Neuralink. You know, ChatGPT could control every answer they come up with.
Yeah. Yeah, they would be literal puppets at that point. I mean, when you look at the Democratic Party, my God, just the three you named right there, like, these are the heroes. You got John Fetterman just lurching around like a gym class ogre, and Dianne Feinstein just being wheeled around like one of those people from Star Trek that just like communicates and beeps. I mean, it's just shameful. It's all shameful, Jefferson. Maybe that's what we need. Maybe the Democrats need a little Neuralink upgrade. Maybe they need to have their hardware and software forcibly upgraded. Maybe they won't just be. Maybe they'll be even less controllable than they are now. Because right now, I don't know. I can't imagine them being more controlled than they are now with Joe Biden being ordered around by the Easter Bunny. I don't know how much more controlled can you get by than that.
It's a technological nightmare in our future, coming soon to a neighborhood near you.
Amen, Jefferson.
All right,
thank you for that. We'll go to one more here because Andrew in New Jersey's been holding on for a while as well. We also have Evan, Bob, Puss in Boots, Jason, Leora. We'll get to all of you in the next hour, but let's finish up with Andrew in New Jersey first. You want to talk about Venezuela border crossings? Go ahead, Andrew, you're on the air.
And first, I wanted to give you credit because I worked in Wilkes-Barre last year with the Fox affiliate, and they're real attuned. You know, they're embarrassed by Fetterman, so I used your line. It was one of the best. You said, it's bring your monster to work today.
Did I say that? That's so mean.
Yep.
Am I that mean?
but they loved it. And,
that's funny.
That was great. And I just quick with TurboForce, there's no side effects. It's only positive things in there with energy drinks. Even the sugar-free ones, the chemicals are harmful in the energy drink. Regardless, if there's some nutritionists actually say that a diet soda is even worse because of the harmful chemical. So TurboForce is only good, positive. And like you said, it just makes you feel awake. It's not a rush and a crash. But I want to say Venezuela, Bernie Sanders likes Venezuela, because Owen was at the border, and the white liberal girl was actually pretty good. He was debating, and she was saying it's our fault that they're coming over. But you could comment on that. All we did was put an embargo, meaning we're not buying the oil, but they could sell it to someone, another nation like China, a communist nation. Your thoughts on that?
I didn't see the debate that you're talking about, so I can't comment on that in particular. But obviously Venezuela, I mean, this is sort of the argument that's been going on for decades at this point about them or any other place out of the border. And it's sort of a case-by-case basis, because you look back to, it depends on how far you go back. I mean, you go back to the 50s or the 60s, and you literally have the CIA like overthrowing South American countries on behalf of the Dole Corporation or whoever, right? Like, just American corporations just call up their buddies at the State Department and go, hey, there's a guy that wants to cut into some of our profits. Do you mind? And they just take him out and make it look like a big celebration of liberty. So there's that. But then that sort of gets conflated with like socialistic and communist people coming into power south of the border, and then America like not wanting to trade with them and economically pressuring them. So it's sort of, I don't know. There was that guy, they called him the president of Venezuela, and he was literally just like some CIA plant. And like even Trump like introduced him at his State of the Union being like, and we're here with the real president of Venezuela. And it was like so telling, because obviously the intelligence apparatus made him do that, because he literally like rolls his eyes. He's like, here's this guy. And he's like rolls his eyes while everybody claps for him. So, they're trying to overthrow Venezuela as well. I don't know if that's our place. I think if a country wants to be communist, let them go down the toilet. We don't have to interject ourselves and install some Western backed dictator, pretending to be the good guys. So I don't know. It's sort of a case by case basis down there. But of course, now it's not really the same. It used to be that we had this paranoia as a country about communists taking over. And so we would do that sort of thing, use economic and even military and certainly black ops pressure to get rid of communistic or socialistic rulers down there. Now you see the opposite, where you see Bukele in El Salvador just ruthlessly getting rid of the gangs, bringing his country back from the brink of insanity, going from the most murders to the least murders in all of the Western Hemisphere. And yet it's our government and our media apparatus that despises him for it and is calling him a fascist and saying all these horrible things. So he's not communist. He's just cleaning up the mess the communists leave behind. And now our government hates that guy. So things have changed recently. And I don't know if some of these conversation points that are typical about South American countries really make any sense anymore. I usually host American Journal each and every weekday morning, 8 to 11 a.m. on band.video and Infowars.com. You can also go to AmericanJournal.bio.link to find all of our social media platforms. We're staging a covert recapture of social media after a very long series of censorship programs. We're just not taking it anymore. So we're conforming ourselves to the rules and still trying to break through the mainstream media firewall and get the truth out in this chaos of lies. I have a lot of videos to go to. Actually, we'll go to this one first, since our previous caller brought up Venezuela and South America. And I was talking about Nayib Bukele, the president of El Salvador, that has absolutely transformed that country into a haven for criminals and cartels, into one where they fear to operate. And they're desperate to not let you see this, because they're desperate to not let you know what works, what effective measures can be taken to reclaim public life from the criminal element that prevents normal people from embracing and enjoying the freedoms that their first world or third world or whatever country they live in should be providing for them. And we'll talk about how America's taking a bit of a different tack in this regard, actually doing everything the criminals could want, enriching them, empowering them, covering for them constantly. And of course, it's having an outsized negative impact on just regular American people, to the extent now that you're essentially being told that you are a white supremacist and, you know, some sort of evil person if you dare to suggest that you should be able to walk down the street or ride the subway without fearing for your life or being assaulted in some way, even if it's just your eyes being assaulted by some horrific, disgusting act taking place on the sidewalk because the police can't remove the drug-addled psychopaths that live there now. Yeah, it's white supremacy to demand that you just be allowed to go to the park. You know, there's certain things that you should just be able to. It's like actually a necessary part of liberty. See, it's actually kind of convoluted or a little bit counterintuitive that, like, liberty, you can't have liberty without peace. You can't be free and have liberty if you're under constant threat. Those two things don't comport with one another. So to have liberty, you need peace. And to have peace, you need order. And to have order, you need law. So in a very kind of bizarre way, in order to have liberty, you actually have to have restrictions on your liberty. Like, you have to have laws. You have to have things in place that stop criminals from taking advantage of other people and destroying other people's liberty. Because, yes, the government can destroy your liberty by locking you in your home and shutting down your business off some pandemic they released half a world away. That certainly destroys your liberty. Your liberty is also destroyed by the gang down the block that hangs out on the basketball court that means you can't use the public facilities without fear of your life. That also destroys your liberty. So this is high level stuff here, but our founding fathers understood it. And we understand that liberty is not a license to do whatever you want. It is a requirement to do as you should, to treat your other fellow human beings in a respectable and respectful way. Only then can we actually have liberty. So to have liberty, you need peace. To have peace, you need order. To have order, I wish it wasn't true, but you need laws. You really do. And you need them enforced. You need them enforced in a way that is symbolized by, you know, the Lady Justice, the sword, the scale, and the blindfold. Right now, the blindfold's been ripped off Lady Justice, and it's actually determined by who you are and what you believe, whether so-called justice will rain down on you or whether you'll be ignored and allowed to carry out your injustices on your fellow citizens. But all of this is to say that El Salvador's figured this out and is having massive success in their war against the cartels and the criminal gangs that once ran roughshod over that country. And it's a phenomenon that we're experiencing here in America that, like, we almost don't even notice when cops get shot anymore. I'm sure somebody's been keeping track, but it's almost such a regular thing at this point. Cops dying on the job, cops being shot by criminals, killed while they're attempting to establish peace in this country. We almost, like, don't even notice it anymore. It happens constantly. Some just, like, direct assassination attempts, targeting cops just sitting in their cars, and some dude walks up with a gun and just shoots them both in the head. Like, that happens regularly at this point. And then there's also just, like, in the course of trying to arrest somebody, a cop gets shot. And, you know, at this point, it's almost like they don't even want to mention it because they know that if you try to, like, honor a cop, Black Lives Matter is going to come burn down your church or something. So it's like they don't even care. El Salvador's had the exact opposite response. They've been waging a war against cartels for 3 years. They've locked up tens of thousands of them. They've brought their country from the number one in murder to the number one in peace. And they've done it through actions like this. They had one police officer killed. One police officer was killed by a member of a criminal gang. So what did they do? Well, they surrounded the entire town and eradicated the gang, found the murderers, and brought them to justice. And then they made a video telling how they did it. So we can all learn what it takes to live in a safe and prosperous country. Here is El Salvador's response when a police officer was killed.
El 16 de mayo,
he says, on May 16th, a gang member killed a police officer in the northern region of the country. That very night, 5,000 soldiers and 500 police officers surrounded an entire municipality to catch the killers. We promised that they would pay dearly for killing one of our heroes who lost his life while protecting the Salvadorian people. We destroyed their gang clique and arrested over 50 terrorists, including their leader. And now, we have arrested the three killers. The military lockdown had two missions. The first mission was to bring the cowardly killers to justice for attacking our officer, Maximo Vasquez. The second was to eradicate the local gang clique, Fulton Locos Salvatrucos, from the municipality of Nueva Concepcion and the surrounding area. Shameless and cowardly terrorists, they call them, take off their helmets so that everyone can see just who we're talking about. They will never again cause terror in our country. That's what it takes. That's what it takes. There's a story. El Salvador forces surround town in north after police killing. So that's called zero tolerance for violence in a country. I frankly would like to see it here. Wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't that be nice? Now, when you talk about police operations here in America, you can't help but talk about Black Lives Matter, can you? Now, there's been a trend going on. I know Owen mentioned it. I find it just brilliant, utterly hilarious. This idea of showing Target stores that have just been burned to the ground, looted to non-existence during the Black Lives Matter riots, and saying this is what conservatives are doing in protest of the Pride material being sold. And it's just such a great illustration of just the two extremes, the two differences. On one side, it's a boycott. It's literally a boycott. It's just people not going to Target anymore. They're just not going. You know, some people go and film themselves just looking at the stuff and going, look at this. Isn't this gross? Like, that's the worst, really, you can expect. Except for, like, one dude, Ethan Schmidt, who just, like, punches the Pride sign. And they're just like, no, how dare you? How is Target being embroiled in the latest anti-trans campaign by dangerous MAGA terrorist Republicans, right? All these just headlines, fear-mongering, and oh, my God, how will we survive? And then you compare that to just burning entire stores down, looting them to the racks, to the shelves. That was done by Black Lives Matter. And the response at that time was Target being like, we understand and respect the protesters and things can be replaced, but the beauty of Black Lives Matter can never be diminished. And it's just like, it's brilliant. It's an amazing comparison. It really illustrates where we are as a country and what's allowed and what's not and what you can do and what you can't, right? You're evil for just not shopping at Target, but when they burn a Target down, they're heroes and get celebrated and Target gives them tens of millions of dollars, right? They did. Just incredible. And even now, the violent threats are coming from the left. Utah Target evacuated after trans extremists threatening to bomb multiple Target locations for removing satanic groomer products. These people are psychopaths. These people are unhinged, terroristic in nature. But it's us. It's us that are bad because we just don't want to shop at a place that hates us. Okay. Now, when it comes to Black Lives Matter, scam is not enough to encompass what they truly are. But there's a lot of information about this coming out. Only 33% of Black Lives Matter's 90 million in donations helped charitable foundations. They actually have this very helpful chart showing how Black Lives Matter burned through most of its $90 million in donations in 2 years. They did supposedly send $30 million in grants to charitable foundations. I would be willing to bet that if you actually go and start breaking that down, it turns out that that goes a lot towards, like, salaries and dangerous event. Like, that's not good either. I'm sure these charitable foundations, it's not like buying, you know, candy for orphans, okay? It's not. When they say charitable foundations, they mean the type of globalist NGOs that are flooding our country with immigrants and destroying our ability to just have a functioning economy by relying on the best people for the best job. That, you know. So even like in the best possible situation where 30% of their revenue has actually gone towards charitable organizations, it's not as good as you'd think. But then they break down the $22 million in expenses they paid to BLM GNF board member Shalomaya Bowers and her consulting firm over $2 million, to Patrice Colores, that's the head of Black Lives Matter, her brother and his security company got $1.6 million. Trap Heels LLC is a company run by the father of Colores' child, so the founder of main operator of BLM, her baby daddy got a cool $1 million from BLM, to a former member's consulting firm in connection with a contract dispute. They got $600,000, and a payout to former managing director Kaylee Scales. She got $114,000, and the houses that she's bought, and they've really raked it in. They've really just made a ton of money while doing absolutely nothing for anybody. Oh, except for all of the things that they did do, which raised the murder rate across the country by like double digits and killed maybe tens of thousands, certainly thousands of extra Black Americans in this country over the last couple years. So Black Lives Matter, their primary contribution to the Black community has been to cause rampant, ridiculous violence and the death of thousands of Black Americans. Oh, but they're not done. Black Lives Matter co-founder loses multi-platform Warner Brothers deal after delivering no content on contract. In October 2020, 39-year-old Black Lives Matter co-founder and former leader Patrice Colores signed a multi-year contract with Warner Brothers Television Group to create content for the entertainment giant, but the studio quietly ended their relationship last year with no materials produced, reports the New York Post. On Friday, a source familiar with the situation told the outlet the studio signed an overall deal with BLM co-founder Patrice Colores at some point in 2020, but the deal expired at the end of 2022. October 2022. The deal unfortunately did not result in any produced shows. Oh, but I bet she got paid. They wanted to help her make documentaries focused on reparations and social mobility of Black Americans, as well as a scripted program on marijuana. It's totally ridiculous. I mean, so again, it just sort of depends on what side you're on, whether you get justice in this country. I mean, if you, walk around the Capitol building without permission, you're going to jail for the next couple decades. But if you burn down multiple American cities and cause tens of billions of dollars in damages and massive skyrocketing crime rate and thousands of extra deaths and God knows how many just violent crimes as well as that. And that, of course, clogs up the court system. So now you're causing even more problems. Like, if you do that, then Warner Brothers is happy to sign a contract with you and not even make you do anything for it. Like, they're happy to produce your propaganda, but if you're just a lazy piece of crap, then they'll just give you the money and not do anything. So a little bit different of a reaction there. I thought this was pretty brilliantly put, although I can sort of tell that this guy maybe hasn't quite gone far enough. It's Dr. Joel Brown on Twitter at Joel Brown MD. And this is just the human reaction. This is just an American human reaction to reality. Okay, he says this. My youngest daughter was only 3 when I took her on my first Black Lives Matter rally. The atmosphere was electric. I felt so alive and energized on the streets, marching in solidarity with everyone who felt the same social commitment to change. I wanted her to understand what being Black meant from a young age, being baptized in the struggle for racial justice. It was a pseudo-religious experience for me because at that time, my Christian faith was broken and I was a radical anti-theist. But even in that spiritual wilderness, I needed something to believe in, some deep purpose to animate my moral impulses towards. That's the need that I hoped Black Lives Matter would meet in that season. I think it's important to those who critique these Marxist justice movements understand some of these spiritual and psychological dynamics at play, some who are caught up in the wildfire stampede. If we can address the deeper needs, offering compelling alternatives that are based on truth, reality, and fairness, we can perhaps be more persuasive in convincing more people to course correct. And I think this is exactly right. Honestly, I completely agree with him. And, you know, you can tell from the way that he phrases that and, you know, others of his tweets, he woke up from this lie. He now understands that what he really needed was actual spiritual fulfillment that can only come from actually believing in the real God, not some facsimile, not some social justice lie that's trying to fill the hole in your soul that is reserved for a supreme being. So he's moved on from what his beliefs were, but I think a lot of people are looking for meaning. A lot of people are looking for some spiritual purpose, and they find it in things like Black Lives Matter. They find it in things like transgenderism or Antifa or communism. And it's not that these things actually offer spiritual fulfillment. They wear the mask of spiritual fulfillment, but they still take advantage of those same impulses that can drive people towards higher values and spiritual goodness. They hijack those and they twist them and warp them and pervert and destroy them. Because after all, if you're not actually seeking after something higher and good and real, then what could be the best thing in the world, this spiritual impulse, can become the worst. And most of human experiences are like this on the extremes. The worst thing in the world is very, very close to the best thing in the world. There's just like a little bit that's different. It's just a little bit that's off, right? And I need a better example because this example is kind of crude, but it illustrates the point in that, like, you ask a lot of people, rape would be the worst thing in the world. Sex is the best thing in the world. They're the same, but a little bit different. There's a little bit different, but functionally, physically, they're kind of the same. But if you're missing consent, the best thing in the world becomes the worst thing in the entire world. Like a lot in sex and reproduction, it's like the most important thing in the world for the prolonging of the human species. So it's these things that get perverted, they get twisted, they get manipulated into being the worst thing in the world. Just like being married and in love and having children and being fruitful and multiplying is positive and good and also built upon the same physical impulse that leads people down a path of darkness and destruction and perversion and unholiness, let's just say. So it's just an example of like the impulse is there. It's not good or bad. It can be turned good or turned bad. There's really no middle ground in any of it. He also says this, Dr. Joel Brown again on Twitter, Black Lives Matter was a global extortion racket that preyed on all of our moral institutions, leveraging black outrage and collective white guilt to sinister ends. It used a slogan that sounded too noble to deny, but fueled racial animosity under the guise of racial justice, lining the pockets of ideological Marxists and leaving the social fabric more ruined than it was before. And this is why I like this guy, because he seems like he has appropriately made the full reverse, right? Made the full 180 turn to understanding what this thing really is. Because a lot of, like, and I always relate back to, like, having voted for Obama when I was a young, stupid 18-year-old because I believed what he said. I bought his lies. I thought he was telling the truth. He said a lot of the same things that Donald Trump said when he was running for presidency. He was going to stop the wars. He was going to end racial division. I was all for it. And then I learned it was a lie. When I learned it was a lie, I got mad at the liar, and I realized that this was a deception. It was worse than just not being right or not being capable. I was being used, and my goodness was being used to perpetuate a bad end. And that's what people need to realize, because I feel like what happens with a lot of people is they're like, I support Black Lives Matter. Of course I support Black Lives Matter. I give money. And then they learn it was a trick, and they just sort of go, oh, yeah, see, nothing's real. Nothing's real. Like, they're the same as anybody. I still support them, but like, I'm not going to give them money anymore. And it's like, no, you got to go a full 180. You've got to understand, you've got to get mad at the people that fool you and trick you and make a fool out of you and take your money and use it to destroy you. Like, you can't just shrug that off. You have to fully embrace the opposite side, which has been telling you the whole time who these people are. So like, you can't just shrug your shoulders and go, oh, well, these people were tricking me. See ya. Here's another tweet from his. The crew just pulled up. Critiquing BLM is heretical to some. It was to me at some point. Of course, Black Lives Matter So if you criticize the organization, its ethos and activities, you must either be racist or a coon. This is precisely why the scam was able to flourish, by gaslighting and incinerating reasonable scrutiny. See, this guy gets it. He gets it. It's great. It's wonderful to see. Maybe we'll reach out to him. I'd love to interview this guy and talk to him about his growth in all of this. Because again, I see a lot of people sort of realizing what's going on, but not being able to put it all together. Not being able to go, okay, it's not that these people were wrong and that, like, well, they're just trying their best and just didn't quite get it right. No, they're despicable liars that are evil, that are using you. You should hate them because they hate you. Sorry, that's what it is. And then we have sort of the outcome of all of this in these two stories. Black woman fired after being late to work 47 times. She sues the company she was working for discrimination and won millions of dollars. Last week, a Manhattan jury awarded $11.5 million to a 39-year-old Robin Europe. Her last name's Europe. A black woman who sued her former employee Equinox Gym, saying she was unjustly fired for sexism and racism. Equinox claimed she was fired for being late 47 times over 10 months, a fact that Europe acknowledges is true. But according to the New York Times, Europe believed her lateness was merely a pretext for discrimination. According to the New York Times, as a teen, Europe had experienced the coded bias of privileged teenagers because she went to the elite New York all-girls school Brearley on a scholarship. Brearley. After her teenage years, she spent time, like, who cares about this woman? But yeah, so she's privileged. She's elite. She just can't show up on time. They fire her. She says, "You're firing me because I'm black." The court says, "We're too scared to say that's not true. So we're going to say it is true. So now your company has to pay you millions of dollars, $1.5 million in distress and $10 million for punitive damages." And you know, people are reading this and changing their behavior to reflect what's going on. You know that there are black women out there, or black men, or anybody who just goes, "Oh, all right, tight. I'm going to stop showing up for work on time, and if they fire me, I'm going to sue the hell out of them, and I'm going to let them know I'm going to do that." And then you've got the managers of these people, who might also be black, by the way, saying, "Oh crap, if I fire this person, they might sue the company for tens of millions of dollars, so I better just let them be late." So it's sort of a win-win situation for the employee. It's either you get to just show up late all the time, not do as much work as your, you know, fellow people, but still get paid the same amount and not get fired, even though you're terrible. That's a win. Or they fire you and you sue them and you get tens of millions of dollars. That's a real win. It's a lose-lose for the companies, of course. And this is all part of just the Marxist deconstruction of our society as being one built on meritocracy and, you know, mutual cooperation into just like vicious, who can destroy each other the most efficiently while we tear the whole thing down. That's what it's all leading up to. There's also this story. Lululemon fires two Georgia employees for calling the police on looters. I know Owen covered this, so I won't get too much into it. But yeah, two employees called the police over looters that were robbing the store. They robbed it four or five times in this one place. They finally called the police, and now they're being, then they were fired for calling the police. So it's just another outcome, another major change in just human behavior brought about by Black Lives Matter and their anti-cop, anti-white, anti-rules and law and order, just anti-everything that it took to build this country, which is why the country is now collapsing. And we'll get into exactly how it's collapsing in the next hour. In the meantime, let's go to your calls. Evan in California wants to talk about Russia, Turkey, and Iran. Thanks for calling in, Evan. You're on the air.
It's a pleasure to talk to you, Harrison. I've never spoke with you before.
Good to hear from you.
I wanted to point out that in human history that Russia and Turkey and Persia were never aligned in human history.
The opposite. They've been enemies for thousands of years, yeah.
Yeah, so in Ezekiel 37 to 38 war, when it's describing this stuff, this is the world we're leading up to. And I think a big part that would be informative to people that maybe aren't super religious is that the Bible's propheticness is super profound. It's like a Harry Potter story to people that aren't religious, that the fact that the Bible tells you that Israel would be gone for almost 1,900 years and that there'd be massive deception and that Israel would come back and the world essentially would be perplexed, when you look at, I wanted to point out something quickly about PSYOPs. The Catholic Church, and I was raised a Catholic. My mom was a Catholic. I've heard great things from Catholics. I listened to Fulton Sheen growing up as a kid. The Catholic Church, look it up. It killed approximately 400 million Christians. The greatest murderers of Christians in the history of planet Earth is the Catholic Church. And I don't say that to point out to Catholics, hey, look, you have a bad church. I'm trying to point this out that a lot of good people have called themselves Catholics and don't realize that there's more blood on the hands of the Catholic Church than anything in human history. Wars against Muslims, World War One, Two, Three, you add them all up, you add everything. Chuck Missler, a very learned guy, has done probably 30 videos on it. You could watch on YouTube. I just point this out for this reason, that it was the black population in the 60s that had the least out of wedlock kids. They were married. They were doing good. The government went after them. And how did the government go after the black community besides rewarding, to pay,
single fatherhood?
Exactly.
Single
but the way they did it was to destroy, was to go after the church leaders. Yep. And I really want to point this out because I believe it really carries a lot of weight if people follow it. The number one crasher of our border right now is NGOs through the Catholic Charities.
Yep.
Catholic Charities are promoting communism around the world. They're bringing in the one world order. And there's an awful lot of people, maybe 10% listening now, but there's a lot of people that consider themselves Catholics because when you go there, it seems peaceful. And, the giant building, and it seems peaceful. I want people to imagine all the blood that should be in there for the doctrine that killed millions of people. And I point this out for this. It's when people look to the trans community to share essentially love and acceptance when they're essentially abusing kids. They use the Catholic Church to show what is holy, and they're done the least holy things in human history. So I want people to realize that you're supposed to, through all this suffering that's coming, people getting vaxxed, end times, battles, wars, all these things that are bad, how could God use this to his end? How could it be good? Well, people got to come to the fact that false doctrine has to end now.
Wow, what a powerful call, Evan. Thank you for that. More of your calls, more videos on the other side. Don't go anywhere, folks. Sunday Night Live continues, broadcasting live from the InfoWars World Headquarters here in Austin, Texas. Let's talk about the thing that we've been saying was coming for a very long time. No longer can we say that global governance is on its way. It's here. It's fully here. And it's operating out in the open now. They're not even hiding it. Although you can still piece out what is a part of their program by the little code words that they use. Stakeholder would be one of them. So we're going to show you some videos here. We're going to go out to your phone calls and talk about some of the developments in the institution of this one world government that will serve as an unelected, uncontrollable, neo-feudal system. Uses technocratic control grid as a digital panopticon to ensure that revolution will never be possible again. All you have to do is look at a place like China, see the way that they have implemented the social credit score and the way that they can isolate, they can isolate the communications of an area, they can attack it militarily, they can lock it down like they did under the guise of COVID-19, welding people into their apartment buildings. I mean, there's no chance that there's some grassroots movement in China that snowballs and grows and brings more people in. No. That opportunity is precluded from their future without some sort of massive cataclysm. Even then, it's hard to see how it would work. So they're trying to export that to the rest of the world. The only thing standing in their way is the bulwark of the West, what people used to call Christendom, America, and Europe, that actually had, and still have to some extent, societies that were built upon virtue. Those virtues are being eroded away. The people are being replaced. The ideologies are being subverted and destroyed through education and propaganda, leaving the populations indefensible or like unable to defend themselves against the attacks that are coming. And so much of what's going on seem crazy. They seem like, why would they do this? It's all to remove your defenses. I mean, these are people that want to attack you. And so one by one, they are removing the sword from your hand and the shield from your arm and the breastplate from your shoulders and the helmet from your head because they want the attack to be as easy for them as possible. It's like you're sitting there and you're in a full plate of armor with the Constitution and Christianity and like all these historical, like the thousands of years of Western civilization empowering you and emboldening you and protecting you from the onslaught of tyranny. And one by one, they're taking those things away. And we're like standing here being like, why are they doing this? Why are they taking all this away? It's like, well, because they're going to attack you because they don't want you to be able to defend yourself. It's really not that complicated. It's all very simple, actually, when you get right down to it. And we do have a global government. It's called the World Economic Forum. That's just one of its manifestations. But they gather in Congress, which just means a gathering, right? A parliament, some sort of coming together of these people. They set policy, and then that policy is implemented through their agents and their organs in the national and state level governments around the world. It's just a mafia. It's how it operates, but it's a global government. And they're announcing this, and they let you know this. And one of the primary way that they do this is by manufacturing and then controlling the reaction to crises. And we showed it on American Journal very, very many times. The World Economic Forum meeting this year in February, the theme of that meeting was the poly crisis, right? Poly meaning many, and crisis being what they're creating. So the entire theme of the World Economic Forum meeting this year was how many crises can we manufacture at once? The food crisis, the science crisis, the justice crisis, the disinformation crisis, the cyber attack crisis, global warming crisis, of course, the food crisis, the refugee crisis, right? This is the poly crisis. And John Kerry invokes this concept when he makes one of the just wildest claims that, again, if we just were dislocated, if we were an alien species watching this unfold in a dispassionate and unbiased way, it would be so obvious. It'd be so absurd what's going on here. John Kerry says, farmers must stop growing food to meet net zero goals for emissions. We have to save the earth by not growing food anymore. Democrat President Joe Biden's climate czar, John Kerry, is calling for farmers to stop growing food in order to meet the administration's radical net zero goals for lowering emissions. Kerry, Biden's special presidential envoy for climate, issued the warning during a Green Agenda conference in Washington, D.C. During the Department of Agriculture's Aim for Climate Summit, Kerry told the audience that, quote, if we can't get to net zero, we won't get this job done unless agriculture is front and center as part of the solution. Kerry warned attendees that his and other world leaders' lives depend on farmers ceasing their operations. Stopping farmers from growing food will lower agricultural emissions, Kerry insists. He continued by noting that he does not even call it climate change anymore. It's not change. It's a crisis, he declared. Yes. It's a crisis. Because understand, when it's a crisis, you don't have time to consider the outcome. I mean, it's a crisis. You got to act now, right? If your house is on fire, you don't have time to try to save your stuff. You just got to spray water over everything to save everything. Sure, you're going to ruin your old records and your old photo albums, but hey, that's a small price to pay. It's a crisis after all. So yeah, we're going to have to destroy agriculture. We're going to have to destroy industry. We're going to have to shove refugees into your neighborhood. But you can't think about the effects because it's a crisis after all. Of course, none of their solutions even make remote sense. Like in any form of the, it's just insanity. It's complete insanity. In fact, I mentioned it before that American Journal were starting to put things on TikTok and Instagram and this sort of stuff, cutting it to try to be within the bounds. We've had wild success in South Africa of all places. I'm huge in South Africa now, apparently. 500,000 views on this video where I'm just reading an article from Bloomberg saying South Africa exceeds climate emission goals because of rolling blackouts in the country. So it's not a joke or anything. It's like literally the climate goals are indistinguishable from a societal collapse. They're the same. if there was some drought that was like, well, we can't grow food anymore and everybody's starving, or you do it through executive fiat under claims of emission fighting, you stop people from growing food and there's a food shortage and then you have to ration things and you get to decide who lives and who dies by who gets food and who doesn't based on something. Oh, they're going to have to base it on something. They're going to have to base that decision on something. I wonder what rubric they'll use to determine whether you get food or not. So it's indistinguishable. Natural disaster and the climate change program. So John Kerry says we have to stop growing food. And it gets even more absurd. But first, let's go to this from Michelle Bachman. Call her into Owen mentioned this, but let's hear her breakdown. This is Michelle Bachman. She was on the War Room, Steve Bannon's War Room, I suppose. Here she is breaking down Klaus Schwab's master plan for a one-world government. Let's watch.
They plan that next year, 1 year from now, they will merge the pandemic treaty and the 300 amendments. They will be synchronized with each other, synthesized with each other, and they will be essentially one document, and they will pass next year. So they're planning to make sure they get all the kinks out and they're good to go because they plan to go all in and vote next year. But what the United States delegate, what our delegate said here this afternoon is that she is, that the United States is all in and fully on board with these 300 amendments as currently written, and anybody can access them at the World Health Organization website, but also they're all in on the global pandemic treaty. So the United States is for this. All the nations of the world who spoke today, they're all for it. There isn't one that's dissented. So unless we intervene, this is a done deal 1 year from today, and that's when we have an existential threat to our sovereignty. And we will lose it 1 year from today.
That's absolutely true. We've been talking about this for a while. They were almost about to pass this same treaty until, enough outrage was sparked by it that they... So we'll go back. We'll go back. We'll reconfigure it. We'll come back. We'll try to tyrannize you a little bit later under terms that are couched in more beneficent phrases. So don't worry. We'll be back. And now they are. So she's exactly right. And it's the World Economic Forum and the World Health Organization and the UN. And they're taking advantage of this poly crisis, the health, the climate, the food, the refugee, even though they are causing literally all of it, all of it. The inflation crisis, right? It's just, it's all their fault. But it, as long as the media doesn't tell you that, how are regular Americans going to know? Well, by tuning into Infowars.com, of course. But it gets even more absurd. Biden administration could give climate activists with ties to China veto power over military contracts. Get a load of this. A proposed Biden administration rule would give a coalition of climate activist organizations the power to mandate emissions targets for some federal contractors, including the Department of Defense. The World Resources Institute, WRI, and the World Wildlife Fund, WWF, and CDP form the coalition and have operations in China, which exercises strict control over international non-governmental organizations working within its borders. Subjecting the American Armed Forces' ability to acquire needed products to the decision-making of NGOs who may have significant donations, motivations, or other potential connections to foreign adversaries compromises America's national interest. Delek, an energy company that supplies jet fuel to the U.S. Air Force, said. The Biden administration proposed a rule that would subject hopeful contractors for certain federal agencies to emissions targets set by a coalition of activist organizations, some of whom work with the Chinese government. According to a November 2022 proposal, the Science-Based Target Initiative must validate greenhouse gas emissions reduction plans for all major companies before they can do business with the DOD, NASA, and other General Services Administration. SBTI is a partnership of the United Nations and various climate activist organizations with ties to China, including two whose China-based operations function under branches of the Beijing government. So... We're actually handing China power through these NGOs because the NGOs have to approve the companies before they work for the DOD, and they can just set unreasonable demands, and those companies then cannot provide anything to the DOD, and DOD's prevented from working with like Chinese companies to do this, but maybe they can find a workaround somehow. But it's just suicidal. Like, all of this stuff is just suicidal madness, and it only makes sense when you realize that these people are working together as Michelle Bachmann laid out, in a coordinated, organized, unified fashion to destroy this country, destroy everything that our country stands for, in order to indoctrinate us into a one-world government at which they, where they sit at the very pinnacle and rule the world by fiat through economic pressures, banking systems, NGOs, unelected governmental organizations that can subject us all to this madness. There's a guy who actually broke this down really, really well. I'm not even sure if he mentioned stakeholder capitalism, but that's what he's describing here. He's from the Real AF podcast. Andy Frisella is his name. This was posted by Vincent Kennedy on Twitter. Here is Andy Frisella breaking down the World Economic Forum's playbook on how to institute a one-world government.
Here's why. There's three initiatives that are put down through the World Economic Forum. One is called CEI, one is called ESG, and one is called DEI. These initiatives are put down as social initiatives from the World Economic Forum, the most powerful people on the planet, through the banks to the big corporations. These corporations, unlike my business, actually depend on that financing 100%. So if they don't do the things that these three initiatives, the CEI, the ESG, and the DEI say, they actually lose their funding, so they can't operate their business. So you say, well, aren't these people smart enough to understand why their business, they're destroying their business? They can't not do it. Because if they don't do it, they won't get their funding. So they can't operate. So they have no choice but to do it. And then they drive their business into the dirt. And here's why that's happening. Because the people who run these companies, the officers of the companies, are not the founders of the companies. These are people that are many generations removed and many degrees of caring about the actual brand removed. All right? So these people are college graduates who think they know a whole bunch of stuff because they have an advanced degree, and they are making decisions that are, you know, basically about the money and thinking that eventually people will adopt this and it will stop. But it's not going to stop, and it's not supposed to stop. This is what people are failing to realize. What's happening is we are dealing with a communist insurgency that is undermining the values and the identity of the American public. What they are doing is they are intentionally creating a scenario where the American people rejecting this initiative is actually hurting iconic American brands that remove much of the American identity. So when you name these companies off, all of these companies represent America when you think of them traditionally. So now they're removing part of the identity, which is part of the communist process called demoralization. If there's less identity in America, there's less to fight for, which makes it easier to conquer. All right. Then on top of it, one of the goals of communism is to create two classes of people, very poor and very rich. And so what they're doing here is they are getting the American public to cancel their own companies that actually hurts their own neighbors who are good, hardworking American people. Because the people at Bud Light at the top are not the ones feeling the pain here. It's the delivery drivers. It's the hardworking relief who are getting fired or laid off or losing because of this. So they have run an operation to push this initiative down through the companies intentionally, where the companies cannot resist it because they're required to do so for their funding, knowing that the American people are going to reject it and destroy these companies, creating the lower class system that they're trying to create in the first place.
Dang. I mean, if that doesn't lay it out, I don't know what does. Absolutely brilliant. Andy Frisella lays it out pretty perfectly there. Real AF podcast. I'm going to have to start paying attention to him because he clearly understands it. Even breaks it down to a further extent than I usually do. I mean, he's right. I mean, these companies, say what you want about them, they're staffed and run by Americans up to a point. And at the top, it's international bankers who are using them to their own ends. And he's right. You know, they didn't take any risk to start these companies. They didn't have any brilliant ideas that made these companies succeed. They came in long after the companies had been established, used money that wasn't theirs, right, to buy these companies. Now they're in charge. Now they're running them into the ground, hurting the American economy and the American corporate. So you go to the head of the snake. You have to go to the head of the snake. You have to chop off the head of the snake, which is the World Economic Forum and ESG and DEI and CEI, all the things he laid out there, BlackRock and these banking companies, these investment companies that are forcing the corporations to do this. That's who should be targeted. They should be targeted by politicians, by the policymakers to prevent them from doing this because it's obviously bad for everybody except for them. It's bad for everybody involved except for the people at the very top that are openly now trying to create a one-world government, destroy our sovereignty, our liberty, our way of life, our history in favor of their manufactured chaos polycrisis. There's even more to talk, but just as a final note here, we've got this from Reclaim the Net. EU wants all citizens to have digital ID by 2030. And of course, they are doing this in Europe to a very, very high degree. And this is another story here. Red Sea poll, this is in Ireland, 3 out of 4 think Ireland has taken too many refugees. So the examples I like to point to as they are the most prominent and present in this current moment, the refugee crisis in Ireland, the farmer attack in the Netherlands, and the 15-minute cities in the UK. All three of these have received widespread condemnation from the public. Not like a vocal minority. The vast majority of the places and the people and the citizens of these countries that are affected by these programs do not want these programs. They're getting them anyway. They're getting them in the Dutch farmer. You know, they had an election not too long ago. The farming Dutch farmer political party that didn't exist before the latest election dominated the election. Massive support, huge groundswell of support for them. Doesn't matter. The EU says you have to get rid of your farms, so the Dutch are getting rid of their own farms. In the UK, they announced the 15-minute cities in Oxford and elsewhere, literally saying whether you like it or not, because people don't like it and they're resisting it. And every time they hold a press conference or a town hall meeting about this, it is filled with people who do not want this. Nobody wants it. They're getting it anyway because it's not a democracy. So at the same time that we're starting World War III over Ukraine because we have to defend a democracy, democracy does not exist in the European Union. It does not exist in European countries. What you want, what the majority wants, is easily and without even consideration, without discussion, it is overrun, overpowered, and sublimated to the demands of the globalists who are forcing this down your throat. And Ireland might be the most egregious example, where 3 out of 4 people in Ireland do not want more refugees, but they are getting millions of more refugees. They don't want them, but they're getting them. And the media is behind it the whole way. Fleeing violence and persecution, asylum seekers in Ireland find themselves threatened by far-right activists. Yes, you are a terrorist if you just don't want your entire country being replaced wholesale by people who are literally shipped to your island nation. It's not like anybody's running across the ocean from violence to get to Ireland. They are put on ships by NGOs and the UN and bused and shipped to Ireland on purpose, targeting Ireland for total destruction, which is horrifying because Ireland has just been the subject of imperialism for its entire existence, pretty much, until extremely recently. It's like for hundreds of years, they fight tooth and nail to get out from under the shadow of the British imperial system, only now to just like willingly surrender to hordes of Africans being bussed here by European NGOs. It's disgusting. And so I'm not like exaggerating. I'm not just like, oh, the hordes of... No. Ireland should prepare to receive 80,000 migrants in 2023, the minister says, which is just a drop in the bucket when you consider this article. Ireland needs 4 million migrants to sustain state pension system. So they're going to bring in 4 million migrants. The island of Ireland, by the way, has 5 million people. So they're bringing in 4 million migrants to a country that now has 5 million people. That's called replacement population. That's called the replacement migration program. That's called genocide, is what that's called. Just completely disgusting. And 3 out of 4 Irish people, and that's been consistent. In fact, that's a little bit lower than what I've seen elsewhere, massive poll, because it never got put to vote. The Irish people never actually got asked in an official capacity whether they wanted this or not. But all of the polls I've seen, 75 to 88% of Irish people do not want these refugees. They're getting them anyway. And when they go to protest, the Irish police, you know, do the job of the globalist in shoving the protesters back, calling them terrorists, calling them violent, and silencing them while they're nation is invaded in front of their very eyes. Disgusting, horrific, happening in real time. I've talked too much. Jason in Texas, thank you so much for calling in. You're on the air.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
All right. I wanted to share some relevant content with you. Civil Disturbance Plan 55-2.
Okay.
It looks like when you look at it, it looks like a Nazi blueprint for the United States of America. Pretty sick.
Who produced that plan? Civil Disturbance Plan 55-2. Who produced that?
Civil Disturbance Plan 55-2. Looks like the U.S. government, the Department of Defense.
DOD, okay.
I also wanted to share some other relevant related content. There was a letter from Albert Pike to the Italian leader Mazzini in 1871, titled The Three World Wars, which looks like a playbook. I just wanted to share this important relevant information with you. I don't know if you're aware of it or not.
I've not heard of those particular documents, so I'm taking notes as we speak, and I will certainly look them up. Thank you very much for that information, Jason. I'll look into that and hopefully report on it later in the week. Leora in Georgia has called in about what's really bringing this country down. Only a minute left in the program, Leora. What do you got for us?
Yes. You can hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
I'm going to take you off speakerphone. I had to do it that way. I'll tell you in a minute.
Okay. Well, hurry up. We got less than a minute left now. It's my fault. I know I talk too much, but
am
a lot of important
I off
stuff.
On,
you're good. You're good, Leora. Tell us what you have to say.
All right. First of all, a scripture, woe unto those that call evil good and good evil. Now, starting with that, the last time I talked to you, Harrison, I guess you misunderstood me. I was saying that we needed to act on our faith and do our part. I couldn't tell if you agreed with that, but I said it is God, though, and he's in charge.
Oh, I certainly agree with that. You got no argument from me on that. I'm so sorry. We have to end the program now. Should have gone out to calls earlier, but I'll make up for it later this week. Give us a call on American Journal, Leora, and you'll be shot right to the front of the line on that. Folks, we're going to be off tomorrow, but join us again Tuesday on Infowars.com and band.video. Have a wonderful Memorial Day.